to be starting from Gimel Amud Aleph, from the ninth wide line towards the bottom. So the Gemara is continuing the very long discussion we had yesterday regarding the meaning or the usage of the word order. The Gemara asks what seems to be a pretty obvious question, which is, V'sana didan my taima lo katani leili. Meaning, at the end of yesterday's shir, you know, we spent the entire day trying to justify why the word or was used, but the obvious question is, why bother with the word or at all? Just use the word leile or leil, just and then cut out the entire last off. So the Gemara says, no, lishna ma'al yehu dinakad, v'chidir Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, la'olam al yotzi adam davar maguna mipiv, shahare ikim hakasav shmona osios, velohotzi davar maguna mipiv, shene'emar min habehema tehora, min habehema shere nena tehora. So this is a very famous idea the Gemara develops, which is that the word leil, the word night, is not as nice of a word. This is basically, what the Gemara is basically saying here, is that the Mishnah is trying to speak euphemistically, without using, again, even though we don't really think of the word night as being an inappropriate word, you know, by any stretch. But the Gemara is saying that it's better to use a more positive word, a word like light, a word like or. How do we know that this notion is even true? So the Gemara cites a pasuk from Parshas Noach that when the psukim refer to the animals that Noach brought into the teva, instead of saying he brought in the kosher and non-kosher, the tahor and tameh animals, it simply says that he brought in the behema ha-tahora and the behema asher enena tahora, instead of writing tameh. So the Gemara points out that the Torah was, you know, expended an extra 8 letters by saying enena tahora as opposed to tameh, again, to emphasize that, you know, to underscore this idea that it's better to speak in a cleaner way. Then the Gemara points out Rav Papa Amar Teisha, shene amar ki yevecha ish asher lo yeh tahor mikarei laila. Rav Papa says the Torah added an extra 9 letters to underscore this idea. He cites a pasuk from Parshas Kisetse when the Torah describes the phenomena of a person who becomes a Baal Keri, who has an emission. So instead of calling him Tamei, it says Asher Lo Yihya Tahor, which again is an extra, is in comparison to the word Tamei, is an extra 9 letters. Then Ravina Amar Eser Vav De Tahor. Ravina says it's an extra 10 letters because the word Tahor, if you factor in the Vav, it's really 10 extra letters. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov Amar Sheish Esrei Shene Amar Ki Amar Mikre Hu Bilti Tahor Hu Kilo Tahor. And then Rav Acha points out that there's a pasuk in Sefer Shmuel. This is from the Haftorah that we read on Shabbos Erev Rosh Chodesh. This is when David HaMelech is not present at Shaul's Suda because he knows that Shaul is trying to kill him and he runs away. So the first time that he's not there, Shaul reasons, oh, he's probably a Baal Keri. He's probably Tameh. But instead of saying Tameh, he says that he's Lo Tahor Hu Ki Lo Tahor, which is again a very long way of saying Tameh, which again is underscoring the idea that the Tzukim are going to try and use, you know, cleaner Lishonos, as opposed to the more explicit word tameh. Okay, then the Gemara says, Tanya devei Rabbi Yishmael, la'olam yisaper adam belasho nekia, that a person should always speak cleanly. So the Gemara says, shahari bezav karu merkav, uveisha karu moshav, ve'omer v'sivchar lishon arumim, ve'omer v'das sfasai barur milelu. So the Gemara points out that we know that there are distinctions in terms of Hilchos Tuma between a man and a woman in terms of a Zav and a Zava. Now a Zav and a Zava have very severe types of Tuma. We spoke a lot about this back in Maseches Nida. So one of the types of Tuma that applies to a Zav and a Zava is what's called Tumas Merkav. Tumas Merkav means that if they're riding on a saddle on top of an animal, that saddle becomes Tume. Now the thing is that, as Gemara points out, that in the context of a zava, of a woman imparting that type of tuma, the Torah does not explicitly talk about merkav, because the assumption is that it's an inappropriate imagery to envision a woman, you know, basically spreading her legs to go on top of an animal. So therefore, the Torah uses a more benign, a more neutral type of a lashon, like moshav, like sitting, as opposed to the more explicit lashon of merkav, of riding. And then the Gemara goes on to cite two psukim, both from Sefer Iov, that also underscore this idea. One pasuk says v'sivchar lashon arumim, that you have to use, you know, cunning language. You have to speak in a way which is intelligent in order to not speak inappropriately. And the other pasuk from Iov says v'das fasai barur milelu, that my mouth should speak clearly. So the Gemara wants to know my va'omer. Why do we need these two psukim? So v'chi tema hani mili bidda oraisa avol bidda rabbanan lo tashma v'omer v'sivchar lashon arumim. If you're going to tell me that this notion that we should be speaking cleanly and appropriately, maybe that only applies to psukim in the Torah, but it does not apply to concepts midrabanan to mishnayis. So no, the first pasuk from Iyov tells you that, that this principle extends even to statements made by the rabbis. And then the Gemara points out further that not only is this notion of speaking appropriately true in the context of psukim or in the context of mishnayis or rabbinic statements, but it's even true in just your day-to-day speech. In the way that you normally speak, you also should be speaking cleanly and appropriately. Okay, then the Gemara wants to know, v'isha lo ksiv b'merkav. So now the Gemara questions the initial premise from before, because remember before we said that the Torah never mentions the principle, the concept of merkav, of riding on an animal in the context of a woman, because it invokes this inappropriate imagery of a woman spreading her legs. But the Gemara says, but we find psukim in Chumash, in Tanakh, that actually do reference women riding. So the Gemara says, v'hachsiv, v'atakom rivka v'na'arosah, v'atirkav na'ohagmalim, which just happened a few weeks ago, in Parshas Chayisara, when Eliezer goes to get Rivka, the pasuk says that Rivka was riding on the camel. So the question is, how is that an appropriate lashon? So the Gemara says, no, hasam yishum biyasusa de gemalim orchahu. The Gemara says that because there was fear of falling off the camel, it's considered normal for a woman to ride. Because apparently, since the camel's hump is so high off of the ground, if the woman doesn't, you know, basically spread her legs and sit in a normal way of riding, if she were to sit like side saddle, where both legs were on one side of the camel, it would be more likely that she would fall off. So because this is considered a normal way of riding for a camel, it's not considered to be inappropriate to reference writing in this context. So then Gemara has another pasuk. This is from Parshas Shemos. Vayikach Moshe eshtovi esbanav vayarkivei mal hachamor. When Moshe goes to get his wife and kids from Mitzrayim, it says that that he put them and he were riding on a donkey. Now by a donkey, there's no fear of falling off. So how come it's appropriate to reference the fact that his wife was riding on the donkey? So the Gemara says no. Hasam yishum banav orchahu. That's because of his children. Because since the Walter, do you mind just muting yourself? Sorry, a lot of background. I'm sorry. Okay, so the Gemara says that because there was this concern that she had to, you know, protect her kids, so therefore it was considered normal for her to ride. But if she was riding by herself, that would have been a problem. Then the Gemara says v'hachsev v'hiro cheves al hachamor. Then the Gemara cites a pasuk from Sefer Shmuel. This pasuk is referring to when Avigail came to David HaMelech. There's a whole backstory here. Avigail used to be married to a man named Naval HaKarmelis, who was a Morid B'Malchus. He rebelled against David HaMelech. And at one point, Avigail, again, eventually after Naval is killed, she goes and marries David, actually. But before this point, she's going to plead for her husband's life. So the pasuk says that she was riding on a donkey. So again, how is that appropriate? So the Gemara gives a number of answers. Hasam yishum bi'asusa delelya orchahu. So the first answer is, since she was riding at night, it was considered to be dangerous. Therefore, it was considered normal to be riding in a normal fashion at night. The ibayasema mishum biyasusa delelia leka mishum biyasusa de David ika. Then the second answer is that no, perhaps it wasn't that she was scared of the nighttime per se, but rather the fear was associated with the fact that she was going to the king. She was going to David HaMelech to plead for her husband's life, so that was considered something that was scary. So therefore, she was allowed to ride in that way. And then the ibayasema, third possibility, biyasusa de David nami leka mishum biyasusa de har ika. Or the third possibility is that she was going down a mountain, and it was a steep mountain. It was very dangerous. So in that context also, it was considered to be appropriate to ride in a normal fashion. Okay. Now the Gemara asks, what seems to be a very obvious question on everything we've just said, Uve oraisa mi lo ksiv tamei. Again, the whole premise of our Gemara until now is that the Torah always avoids using inappropriate language. The problem is that the Torah, in many places, uses the word tamei. So fine, so we found you one pasuk here in Parshas Noach and a pasuk, in Parshas Shemos, whatever, that avoids the word tamei. But by and large, the Torah uses the word tamei many, many times. So what kind of principle is this? So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela kol hecha d'chiyada deinenu mishtai b'lashon nekia, kol hecha d'nefishin milei mishtai b'lashon k'tzara, k'da'amar Rav Huna Amarav Amri La Amar Rav Huna Amarav Mishum Rabbi Meir LaOlam Yishna Adam LeSalmido Derech Kitzara. The Gemara says that there is an overriding factor to speaking appropriately, which is teaching concisely. The Gemara says that it is considered to be even more significant than speaking appropriately is the notion that when you're teaching your students, you must do so in the shortest, most concise possible way. Now again, why that is? Maybe that's because it helps them with their memory. That's what Rashi says. The Rambam says it's just appropriate. It's not appropriate to keep your students there for longer than necessary. So therefore, it's considered to be better to teach them in a more concise way. So in other words, what the Gemara is basically saying is that the only time that we give preference to a quote-unquote cleaner way of speaking is only when it's the same number of letters or the same length as speaking in the not as clean fashion. But if speaking in the less clean fashion is going to be shorter and more concise, then it is actually preferred to speak that way because it gets to the point faster than if you were to speak in a more verbose fashion. So the Gemara says, is that true? Is it really true that when the words are the same length, that when it's the same, you know, when it's the same amount, that we're going to dafka go out of our way to speak in a cleaner way? The problem is that, as we mentioned earlier, in the context of writing, so we said that, right, the word Rocheves, that she was riding, that's the pasuk we have from Sefer Shmuel by Abigail, she was riding on the donkey, so the word Rocheves and the word Yosheves, meaning to sit, are the exact same number of letters, and yet the pasuk still uses the more explicit word Rocheves, riding, as opposed to the less explicit word Yosheves. So why is that? So the Gemara says, no, Rocheves ksiv, that's because the way the word is written in the pasuk in Shmuel is minus the Vav. So without the Vav, the word Rocheves is actually one letter shorter than the word Yosheves. Now, why the Gemara doesn't say that the word Yosheves is also could also be missing above is a fair question. That's actually what Tosfos asks, but again, that's kind of a side point. But the point is that, again, the bottom line from this Gemara is that whenever you have a way to speak more concisely, that overrides the notion of speaking in a more clean fashion. That's basically the point of the Gemara. Okay. Now the Gemara has a story that relates to this. Hanu trei talmide da havu yasei kamei de Rav. There were two students who were sitting in front of Rav. So basically, these two students were kind of bemoaning the fact that they were so exhausted after a day of learning. They were so wiped out after a day of learning. But the thing is that each student used a different animal to compare how exhausted they were. So the first student said, "I'm as tired as a davar acher." Now, a davar acher in the Gemara often refers to a pig because we don't want to say the word pig out loud. Almost, so he called it. So he said, "I'm as tired as a pig." The other student said, "I'm as tired as a goat, or as a lamb, as a kid, whatever it was." So the Gemara says that Rav refused to talk to the first student because since the first student spoke about a pig, which is not a kosher animal, Rav refused to talk to him. So again, this story kind of relates to everything that we've been talking about. The Gemara has another story. So in this story, there were these two students who were either in front of Hillel or in front of Rabbi Yochanan, whoever they were. So basically, they were each discussing this very, very technical distinction in the realm of Tumah between harvesting grapes and harvesting olives. Now, what exactly is the difference between the two? So the bottom line halacha, again, the actual bottom line halacha is not so relevant for this Gemara, but we'll just say it out for context purposes. But basically, when a person is harvesting grapes, basically the Gemara says that Gemara says that it is much more important to harvest grapes using tahor utensils, or that you yourself should be tahor, as opposed to by olives. By olives, if you harvest olives when you're tamei or with tamei utensils, that's not a problem. What's the difference? So the Gemara says that when it comes to grapes, so if any of the juices squirt out of the grape, that will make the grape machshir lekabotum, will make it susceptible to becoming tamei. And if either you or the utensils that you're using to harvest the grapes are tamei, that will make the grapes tamei. In contrast, when it comes to olives, so the juices that that come out of an olive are not tamei yet, they're not machshir yet, because olive oil is only machshir when it's processed. Once you put it into the olive press, then it's considered to be a real liquid. It's not a liquid before that. Again, the point of this story is not about this distinction, it's just that when one student was asking the question about why there's a distinction between olives and grapes, he presented it as follows. He said, why is it that grapes are harvested that grapes have to be harvested in the state of Tahara, and olives do not have to be harvested in the state of Tahara? But the second student, when he was asking about the olives, he said, why are olives allowed to be harvested in a state of tuma, as opposed to saying not with tahara? So he said the word tuma almost explicitly, and as a result, the Gemara says that the first student who asked the question in a more clean fashion ended up becoming this very significant post-ache and claw. So again, these stories kind of underscore the same theme that we've been seeing. Bill, you have a question?
Rabbi, yeah. Don't you have to want to see liquid
That's a fair point. Yeah. That's a separate issue. Yeah, that's a separate issue. Again, we're not going to get.
Assumption that with grapes, you always want that liquid. Is that the,
so possibly. Yeah. Again, this is more. This is more. We actually mentioned this. We actually mentioned this back at the end of the first parak on the Masechta Shabbos. So it was kind of, this was a long time ago. Back on Shabbos Daf Yud Zayin, we talked about this. But yeah, again, it's not so relevant. You know the actual details of this halacha for right now. But okay, right. Then the Gemara says Hanu Tlasa Kahane. The Gemara relates another kind of similar story here. There were three Kohanim who were discussing the amount of bread that they were given from the Lechem Hapanim. So they were each given a relatively small amount, but the way in which they formulated how much bread they were given was a little bit different. So the first Kohen said, I got a bean's worth of bread. And the second guy said, I got a kizayis worth of bread. And the third one said, I got the amount of a lizard's tail. Now, of course, a lizard is not a kosher animal. So the Gemara says that they started to get suspicious about the lineage of this third Kohen. They suspected maybe he wasn't really a Kohen with pure Yichus. And in fact, the Gemara says they did some digging and they found out that his Yichus was tainted. He was not a real Kohen. So the Gemara says, hang on a second. How is that allowed? The Mishnah at the end of Masechta Kiddushin tells us that once a Kohen is doing avoda on the Mizbeach, that's it. There's no more investigation necessary. In other words, this notion that I can start to investigate a person's family and, ascertain whether he has pure yichus as a Kohen, so that works until I find someone in his family who is actually actively doing avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. Once you find someone who meets that standard, then that's it. Then all your investigations are done. You know that he's a real Kohen. So the question is that this guy was doing avoda, so how did they even get to that stage? If this guy was not a real Kohen in the first place, how did they even let him get to be doing avoda at all? So the Gemara says, you're right. Lo tema shemetz psul, ela ema shachatz psul. The Gemara never meant to say that he was tainted in terms of his lineage. His lineage was fine. The problem was that this guy had some arrogance about him. So it's not to say that his lineage was tainted per se, it's that his midos weren't so up to par. Again, which doesn't necessarily mean that we should automatically throw him out from being a Kohen. It just means maybe, maybe he doesn't meet the high standards that we expect of other Kohanim. Then the Gemara says, v'ibay or you could suggest that even though in general once a Kohen is doing avoda, we're not going to start investigating his lineage further, but this case could be different because he brought this upon himself. He spoke out inappropriately. He referenced the lizard's tail. So the fact that he himself referenced a non-kosher animal made us suspicious about his own lineage. So again, that could be a reason why we would investigate even further. Okay, now the Gemara has a fascinating story here. Hahu arama to have a solik v'achil psachim Yerushalayim. Amar ksiv kol ben echar lo yochabo, kol orel lo yochabo, va'ana haka achil mi shufrei shufrei. Basically, there was this non-Jew who was bragging about the fact that every year he would lie to the Jews in Yerushalayim and would partake of the Karban Pesach. He would obviously tell them he was Jewish, and we know, of course, that it's usher for a non-Jew to partake of the Karban Pesach. Psukim and Parshas Bo, right? The pasuk says that if you're an orel, you can't eat. If you're not a Jewish, you can't eat the Karban Pesach. And he would be boasting every year he boasted to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira that he ate from the best part of the Karban Pesach, even though he wasn't Jewish. So Amar Le Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, Mika Safu Lach Me'alia. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira realized that the other Jews who were letting him participate in the Karban Pesach were obviously unaware that he was not Jewish. So he wanted to trip up this non-Jew and get him to admit to the other Jews that he was really not Jewish. So what happened? So he told this non-Jew, he said, "Have you ever eaten the fatty tail of the sheep of the Karban Pesach?" Now we know, of course, that the Aliyah, the fatty tail, actually goes on the Mizbeach. You're not allowed to eat the Aliyah, but the non-Jew didn't know that. So Rabbi Yehuda Maseira says, next time you go up to Yerushalayim for Karban Pesach, tell them that I want the fatty tail of the sheep. So Amar lay low. So he says, I never had that. So the Gemara says, Ki salak lahasa, when he came to Yerushalayim the next year, Emalu, he said to the other Jews there, Sefuli me'alia, give me some of the fatty tail. So Ki salak Amar lahu, So then when he came up to Yerushalayim, he said to them, give me from the fatty tail. So Amrulay Alya Lakavosalka. They said, what do you mean? The fatty tail of the sheep goes up on the Mizbeach to Hashem. So Amrulay, so they said, Man Amr Lachachi. They said to him, who told you to ask for the tail? So Amr Lahu, he said, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. So he said that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira told me to ask for it. So Amru, they said, my high dikaman. They said, like, what's going on? Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira knows the halacha. So the Gemara says, Badku Basre, Va'ashkehu da'aramahu katlu. They did a little bit of digging. They realized he wasn't Jewish, and then they killed him. Now, why they killed him, why he deserved to be killed, is a whole other story. The Achron talk about that, why exactly he deserved death for what he did, but at the end of the day, they killed him. So the Gemara says, Shalchu leilu Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, Shlam lach Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, Da'at ben etzivinu mitzudascha prusa b'Yerushalayim. They sent this letter, this message to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. They said, they said, peace be upon you, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, that you're in the city of Netzivin, but your trap extends all the way to Yerushalayim, basically meaning you tripped up this non-Jew, you got him to admit he wasn't Jewish, and therefore we basically took care of him. Now, there's another question on this Gemara, which is, why wasn't Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira in Yerushalayim partaking of the Karban Pesach? That's a whole other question that Tosos addresses. Maybe he was too old to go. Maybe he lived in Chutz Laaretz, and if you live in Chutz Laaretz, maybe there is no Chiyuv to do Aliyah L'Rei. That's a whole separate issue. Maybe he didn't own land. It's a whole separate story about why he wasn't there. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Rav Kahana Cholash. Rav Kahana one time took ill. Shadrua Rabbanan L'Rabbi Yehoshua B'Rei D'Ravidi. So the Rabbanan sent a message to Rav Yehoshua. Amrili, they said, Zil Bedok Maidine. Go check on Rav Kahana and see what's going on with him. See how he's doing. So also Ashkechi Dinach Nafshi. By the time he got there, Rav Kahana had already passed away. So the Gemara says, Kari Lulavushe. So what happened is that he tore his garments. In other words, he tore kriya, as you do when after a Rebbe Muvak dies. But the thing was is that he turned the tear around. In other words, he tore kriya on the front of his shirt, then he turned the shirt backwards, so this way when the rabbis first saw him, they wouldn't immediately realize that Rav Kahana had died. So the Gemara says, what happened? Uvache va'ase. So then he was crying as he came back to the rabbis. So Amru Lis, the rabbi said to him, Nach nafshe, did Rav Kahana die? So Amar lu analoka amina, umotzi diba huchse. So Rav Yehoshua B'Rei D'Ravidi said, it wasn't me who said that, because the Pasuk in Mishlei says that only a fool, delivers bad news. So in other words, he didn't want to explicitly say that Rav Kahana had died, so he basically turned the tear in his shirt to the back and was crying, and the rabbis were able to figure out on their own, without Rav Yehoshua having to say it explicitly, that Rav Kahana died. Okay, then the Gemara says, Yochanan Chakuka Nafak L'Kiryasa. Yochanan from the city of Chakuk, he once went out to the village, Ki Asa Amrulei Chiti Nasu Yafo. So they once asked him, they said, is the wheat crop doing well? In other words, is the wheat growing properly? So Amar Lem, so he said, So'orim Nasu Yafu, says the barley is doing well, which is another way of saying the wheat's not doing so great. So the Gemara says, Amru Leit, Seu Vaser Lasu Simila Chamorim, Dichsiv Ha'so'orim Bahateven Lasu Simila Rechesh. So they said, they almost like,
yeah. Because there's a lot of feedback.
Yes, yeah, if everyone can mute themselves, they're not. Okay, so the Gemara says that, so basically the people of the town responded to him. They said, okay, but barley is basically animal food. So like, what do we care that the barley is doing well? They were upset that the wheat wasn't doing well. So the Gemara says, okay, but my havelei lemeimar, what else should he have said if the wheat wasn't doing well? So the Gemara says, either he should have said, eshtokad nasu chitin yafos, inami adashim nasios. Either he should have said that last year's crop of wheat did well, obviously implying this year's was not, or that lentils are growing properly, because the lentils are considered to be human food. Okay, so now the Gemara says, Rav bar Achua de Rabbi Chia uvar achte. This is actually a very, very strange family tree here. Basically, Rav Chia was Rav's uncle from his father and his mother's side. Now, how does that work exactly? So the way that Rashi explains this, basically, Rav's father's name was Ivu, and Ivu married his stepsister, whose name was Ima. So Rabbi Chia was a sibling of Ivu and Ima. So basically, Rav Chia was Rav's uncle from two sides of his family. That's basically what the Gemara is saying. So the Gemara says, Kisolik lahasam, amar le Ivu kayam, amar le Ima kayemes. Amar le Ima kayemes, amar le Ivu kayam. So when Rav came up, so they basically asked him, they said, is Ivu your father still alive? He said, my mother Ima is alive. And they said, is your mother Ima alive? And they said, my father Ivu is alive. So in other words, he was basically deflecting every time they asked him who was alive, which obviously means that they obviously both died. So Amar Leila Shamai, so Rav told his servant, Chalotz li men alai, v'holich keilai acharai leves hamerchatz. He said, take off my shoes and carry my clothes behind me to the bathhouse. So the Gemara says, Shma mina tlas. We see three things from this story. Shma mina avel asr bin ilas asan. Now, first of all, we know that a person who's in avelus is not allowed to wear shoes. Ushma mina shmur rechoka einan oheges ela yomechad. This is a halacha which is not really so relevant anymore today, but back then when communication took a very long time, so if a person only found out that someone had died, that one of their seven relatives had died more than 30 days after the death, then you only had to observe one day of Shiva. That's called a Shmur Rechoka. And then finally, Yushma Mina Miktas Hayom Kehulo. And also you see from here, that part of the day is considered like the full day. Now, we actually do follow this lahalakha today for the last day of Shiva, where we only basically observe the first hour, a couple of hours of the day, and then the Shiva basically ends after that because of this principle called Miktas Hayom Kehulo. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Hahu Da'amar Donu Dini. There was this guy who was very litigious. He used to love going to court. He used to, in other words, anytime there was ever a fight about anything, he's like, let's go to court and settle it in court. So the Gemara says, Amri Shmamina Mi Don Kase. Dichsev Don Yadin Amo Ka'achad Shivtei Yisrael. So they said this guy must be a descendant of Shevet Dun, because Dun loved judgment, right? Dun Yadin Amo. Since the guy was always saying, don't Udini, judge my cases in court, it's clear this guy was a descendant of Shevet Dun. Then the Gemara says, Ahu Dahava Ka'azil V'Amar Akef Yama Asisne Birasa. There was this guy who used to always praise the buildings and the houses that were built, or the trees that were built next to the river. So Badku V'Ashkechu Demi Zvulun Kase. Dichsev Zvulun L'Chof Yamim Yishkol. They said, oh, this guy must be a descendant of Shevet Zvulun, because Zvulun, we know, of course, was always out at sea. Okay, then the Gemara says, "Vahashta the Kaimalan deluchule ama or ortu." This is really the culmination of the last two dafim that we've seen. Now that we've established that the word "or" means evening, which we again, that was the opening line, the opening word in the Mishnah. We know that "or" means the evening of the 14th of Nisan. So, michti, being the Rabbi Huda, being the Rabbi Meir, chametz eno aser elamishe shows to lamal of a nivduk b'shis. The question is, okay, everyone agrees that mida oraisa chametz on erev Pesach only really becomes aser at the sixth hour. Now, again, we'll talk about this hopefully next week. Midurabbanan, the issue already begins a little bit earlier than that, the fourth hour, the fifth hour, but Mido Reis, it only starts at the sixth hour. The question then is, why don't we only do, in other words, why don't we insist on doing Bedika at the sixth hour? Why are we insisting on doing it so much earlier? Or, in other words, the night before. So the Gemara says, V'chite mazrizin makdim lemitzvos nivduk mitzavram. So the Gemara says that if you're going to tell me because of this the famous principle called Zrizin Magdim Lemitzvos, we want to jump and do mitzvos as early as possible, that notion means that you should do mitzvos as early as possible on the day of. So for example, if you have to give a bris milah to your son, you do it the morning of. You don't give the milah 3 days before. That's not called Zrizin Magdim. If you blow shofar 3 days before Rosh Hashanah, that's not called Zrizin Magdim. That's just called you're not doing the mitzvah. So in other words, if you wanted to do Bedikas Chametz in the right time, if you wanted to jump on the mitzvah, so do it first thing in the morning on the 14th. Why do it the night before? It sounds like it's the wrong time to do it. So the Gemara says, you're right. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, B'shah Shebnei Adam, Mitzuyin B'vateyam, B'or Haner Yafel Bedikah, because nighttime, people are home, people come back from work, and also, again, this is obviously before electricity, candles are more effective at night. So it's just practical, makes more sense to do the Bedikah at night. And therefore, the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Hilka Chaitzurva Me'rabanan, Lo Liftach Be'idnei Be'urta Detleser Denage Arbeisar, Dilma Mitzvah. Therefore, a Talmud Chacham should not sit down and start learning Torah on the night of the 14th of Nisan because we're afraid, in other words, again, until he does Bedikas Chametz, because otherwise he's going to get too engaged, too involved in his learning, and he's going to forget to do Bedikas Chametz. So therefore, you should take care of the mitzvah first.